Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
We are back for Season 3 and it's going to be a good one.
With the aim of raising the profile of British distance running, we're bringing you more content than ever.
Every week, we'll give you insights into the lives and training of some of the UK's top athletes and coaches,
as well as all the latest updates from the races up and down the country and around the world.
You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast streaming platforms.
Keep a lookout for our new YouTube channel too, where we're posting workout videos, shoe reviews, and much more.
Stay up to date by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
And if you want to drop us a line, send us an email to info@sundaypodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the episode. Right, hello. Welcome back to another episode. Race preview this week for our main episode. Highgate has come around once again. I can't believe how quick it has come around. And kind of it seems like we've just been almost in cross country and then we've flown through road season and we're on the track already for the night of the 10K PBs. Obviously, event we've covered lots before. If you're interested in kind of the history of the event, we spoke to Ben Poshy, race organizer, last year for a main episode. So go check that out on our channel if you're kind of interested in the history of the event. But today we're going to kind of chat through the men's and the women's elite fields and how it's going to go down. First of all, though, Matt, you're up in Copenhagen, right?
Yeah, I mean, sunny Copenhagen, to be honest. It's about 22 degrees, bright sunshine, absolutely glorious. And yeah, getting ready for the Copenhagen Marathon tomorrow morning. So very much looking forward to that. We've got a few Brits out here, actually. It's got a small England team out here as well. So a few pacing. And actually just bumped into Ellis Cross in the hotel. And obviously he's going to be doing Highgate, one to watch in the men's race, that's for sure. But we were going to start with the women's race anyway, weren't we?
Yeah, definitely, mate. And obviously, women's elite field. Firstly, I just want to say, I think that the women's race, in terms of the domestic field anyway, much stronger than the men's. And just a point I wanted to highlight here, perhaps it's a case of the World Championship standards. I don't think it's a case of men not wanting to do the race or the race not being kind of deemed good enough. But I just think with the women, there's a lot more of a chance for some of these ladies to actually go and make the team with a standard of, 30-40, sorry, the 10K standard. And so Jess Judd already has it, and Sam Harrison's run a 30-51 on the road already this year. So I'm sure she's hoping to kind of get under that, whether it's next weekend at Highgate or on the road at another point. Whereas compare that to the men's standard, 27-10, it's kind of looking unlikely for a lot of our elite men.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, we'll get on to the men shortly, but I do think the women kind of outdo the men this weekend with domestic Brits involved in that lineup, like you said, man. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, we saw a great battle last year with Jess Jard and Sam Harrison. Jess coming off the back of a terrific half earlier in the year, 67 in Houston, but that was in January. And she's been out in America. She ran 15 teens at 5K just last week. So how is she kind of feeling heading into this 10K? Because she's going to have to, well, split near enough that, next weekend. So it'd be interesting to see how she gets on. But I'm looking forward to seeing Markov as well give the 10K a really good crack. There's someone who probably hasn't given 10K a good crack off of her 5K time. The very fact she's broken 15 as well. And yeah, I think Sam Harrison for everyone is quite an exciting prospect. Obviously ran really well at London, wants to bounce into Highgate, and you know, from speaking to a few people who kind of know, you know, of her and know of her training setup, I think she was always one eye on Highgate as well. Defo wants to kind of compete there, and I think go to the Worlds in the summer over the 10K, because I think it's much more manageable when you look at long-term, your long-term season. If you're going to have another crack at a marathon, you want to do it at the end of the year, not during the middle of the year where the World Champs would be. So it's a good opportunity for her to go to the World Champs. So I think those two are kind of, from a British perspective, you're probably there, your standouts, but there's a few people I'm excited to see as well.
Yeah, 100%. And adding to that, the likes of Callie Thackeray, obviously great 5K PB, ran sub 15 on the roads last year, but 10K 33-41, I'm sure that's going to be revised. We've obviously seen it already over the half marathon running 69 minutes already this year. So she's clearly got the strength. It's just how she can kind of translate that 5K speed into a 10K.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, again, she's running well, trains with Sam Harrison, paced her at London. And if anything, probably coming into this a little bit more prepared compared to Sam Harrison. She hasn't had to recover after the marathon, so she's kind of gearing up for this event. So, yeah, we're going to get a good three-way battle at the top. There's also Amelia Quirk in there, who I'm quite excited to see. It's going to be her debut on the track, at least. So, you know, what can she do? Obviously, still quite young, bright prospect. And Sarah Aston as well, national cross-country champ. You know, can she get down near the kind of low 31-minute mark? Be interesting to see. So, and of course, Verity Ockenden, who I guess hasn't been at her best past few years, but you know, on her day can be very good.
Yeah, 100%. And this was the point I want to make. Apart from by Elish McColgan, we've pretty much got every single kind of female distance runner kind of who's right near the top in terms of these are the girls who are making the Eurocross country teams. These are the girls who are representing the home nations at Commonwealth Games, at Worlds, at the Olympics in the 5 and the 10. So it's a real kind of domestic ding-dong, if you like. And just exciting to see that. And hopefully, I guess for the neutral fan and Jenny fans, we want to see people battling. We don't always want to see the same names at the top of the park.
Mate, if you're there on Saturday night, yeah, you want race on your hands because it is going to be so noisy. You got those, you know, the tunnel's been extended. It's going to be 90 meters long on the back straight, which I think is just going to give even more anticipation to those located on the home straight and dotted around the track because they're not going to be able to see what's going on. I think it's going to be absolutely crazy. And yeah, you want a race in your hands. And I think the nice thing about the women's race is I think they have a legit chance of winning the overall race as well. Mm-hmm. You know, there's one girl in there who could be two, potentially, actually three, actually. So, but I think our British girls, if they have a good day, for example, Jess Jard has a good day, Sam Harrison has a good day, they can compete with the likes of Wayne Kalati, who's basically the same level as him. You know, I would argue some of our girls are better than her. She's just inside a 15-minute 5K runner. You got obviously Nadia Battacaletti, 14:46 5K runner. And but I was looking into her a little bit, and she did the Italian 10K champs last week. She won it comfortably in 33 minutes. So I'm sure that hasn't taken too much out of her. But, you know, that she's a classy runner, one they're going to have to be on their form to beat. And then just finally, Hor Fisa, if you pronounce it like that, 65:41 half marathon. And she's definitely the one to watch. She is the favorite, probably, if you just look at times, 14:33 and a top eight at Worlds, the Ethiopian. So she's obviously a strong contender for the win. And if you're a betting man, you put your money on her. But I think you just never know what shape they're coming into. Obviously, it's a long travel for them. And I think there is going to be a race. And it's going to be interesting to see who comes out on top. I mean, we know Sam Harrison's can be a little bit, I guess, erratic when it comes to racing. It certainly seemed that way last year when she kind of took off and perhaps just pushed
a little
bit.
You say that, but then when we spoke to Vince on the podcast, it sounded like it was all planned. So I think it'll be interesting to see. I think we're seeing a different Sam Harrison this year. Someone like when you've run 30:50 on the roads, she's there or thereabouts shooting for that standard. I get what you're saying, but I think
I just feel like you don't with the likes of the pacing lights and pacers there, you know, hopefully they're going to have pacers there for at least 3-4K. And you've got the pacing lights. I really do feel like it's not rocket science. You just got to kind of wake up and start thinking about racing over that last 2K. I don't feel like you need to make any moves. And I think the way this race runs is because a lot of people are focused on time and they have a realistic shot at hitting that qualification mark. I think if you do make a move and it happened last year, no one's going to go with you because they're just going to look at the lights and think. And this is where, you know, we've spoken about the lights before. Do they make it more interesting? Do they make it better for the viewer, or do they make it worse? And I think this is where they do actually make it a little bit worse because, yeah, if you're sitting in third place and someone makes a move, you're just going to be like, well, I just need to nail the, you know, or second place, for example, I just need to nail the standard here so they can crack on. Mm. And chances are you're going to come back to them late in the race if you just hug that green light as well, because, you know, they're not Elish McColgan and they're not going to go and run 30 minutes. So chances are they're going to be just on the cusp as well. So you will catch them up if you hug that green light. And we know pacing a 10K very evenly is a sure way to a fast time.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And in that as well, I guess with Highgate. Obviously, it's our British trials, but also the international field we mentioned, it does bring in. But I think that does add to the excitement of it. And I think that's where you mentioned our girls probably have the best shot, despite maybe some of the international field having some good PBs. And I think it's probably the fact that they're racing for a British title, as well as trying to run that time, that will kind of bring them through and make sure that they're at the top of the pile. Because I don't think they're going to think, oh, we're going to let these go and race amongst ourselves. I think they'll get right in and amongst it and take it to them.
Yeah. Yes and no. I think it just depends how early on in the race it is. As well, and like I said, you do just need to secure top two if you know you're on pace as well.
Yeah, I just can't see the way Sam Harrison and Jess Judd run, they're not going to not race for the win. Both of them.
Yeah.
Both of them are gutsy runners. If we had real like kickers who were our kind of had their top times in the British field, maybe. But I think those two girls, I don't think they're going to be intimidated by the likes of Battaglietti, Colati. I think they'll respect them for sure. But I don't think they're going to think, oh, I'll let them run away. Not in the UK, in a British champs race. That's my opinion. But yeah, obviously, Matt, you mentioned, obviously, if people are there, make sure you get showering. It's a great experience if you've not got down there to watch before. So go and watch it. That's on Saturday, so that'll be the 20th. Matt, you're commentating on you as well for the stream?
I'm commentating. It should be live on BBC Red Button as well. So that's what I believe I'm commentating for, or who I'm commentating for. So yeah, very much looking forward to it. Yeah, and just one last note on that women's field. I think a dark horse for me, and you don't really know what shape she's in, is Amy Eloise Markov. Obviously, she ran indoors. She ran 9 minutes, which is okay. But, you know, what has she pushed on a lot from then? And she hasn't raced. And I think for a 10K, don't really think you need to be honest with you. When you're going into, you know, a peak 10K, we've seen it time and time again. Athletes at the highest level are able just to come out and just pop a big 10K, regardless if they've had tune-up races and stuff beforehand. So she's either been purposefully quiet, or she's maybe had a few issues in the camp, which hasn't allowed her to kind of race and open up. But like I said, it's not necessarily that you need to. And we know people like Jess Judd love to race. And obviously Sam Harrison's done the marathon as well. So I do think Markov is a dark horse for me.
Yeah, 100% I would agree with that. And look, you say dark horses still run sub-15 in the 5, 31-25. They're no times to kind of scoff at anyway. So even though they're kind of a bit further off the other two girls, I definitely think she's in to revise some of those. And with that new training setup she's had over the past year or so, hope that's going to kick in and do well for her.
Absolutely. Right, mate. Let's move on to the men's race.
Yeah, so the men's race, obviously mentioned earlier, probably missing some of the domestic names that we maybe would have had last year. But I do think some of that is probably down to that 27:10 standard. Obviously, got the likes of Mo Farah and Mark Scott choosing to race Manchester 10K instead, which is that weekend as well on the Sunday. Just maybe use this as a time to chat about prize money, Max. I think you got the stats for Highgate prize money.
I have actually, and it's a little bit more than what I remember to be. Well, I guess I just probably forgot what the prize money was, because I think it was the same last year. But yeah, £6,000 for the win, £3,000 for second, and £1,000 for third as well, with a bonus of £5,000. Now, the time bonus, and that is actually good to note when you're looking at that women's race, because the record is 31.08. And that is very much doable. So I think there's going to be a Brucey bonus for whoever wins that race on Saturday. And the men's time, 27:16, a little tricky. Obviously, we know that was Cripper last year with that terrific run. Actually let Sam Aitken do a little bit of the work and stuff, but really kind of out on his own last year for a large part of that race to finish. So I'm not sure. It may well be in threat. We've got some very good talent. None other than, you know, last year's world champ silver medalist, Stanley Mimburu. So, and he's a beast, a bit of an unknown prospect. But what I can tell you about him is he's already run 27:33 this year, just last month. So he's clearly in good shape, and a PB of 27:13. So, yeah, you got to take him seriously. What is he, a 13-0 man over 5K as well? So he's someone who could definitely threaten that track record, championship record.
Yeah, 100%. I think this is going to be a bit of bit of the difference. I think probably the only one of our domestic athletes that might go with kind of the pace of the leaders is potentially Bouchard, if he thinks he's got a shot of making that team in the 10Ks. PB is not quite there, but obviously you've seen him do it over the five in the past, and you think that if he's anywhere near that sort of 5K shape, then he's going to be there or thereabouts. Obviously, so running through our domestic athletes, we've got Andy Bouchard, we've got the Mohammed brothers, both Mohammed Mohammed and Zach Mohammed running. Abdi Sharif, Matt Leach, Henry McCluckey, Ellis Cross, as you mentioned already, Jack Gray, Richard Allen, to name a few of them. But obviously some top athletes, but not probably the top end that we've seen in recent years. Obviously last year, you mentioned Sam Atkin already. We had Emil running. We're missing the likes of Mark Scott, but we know he's moved to the roads now, so probably won't see him on the track at all this season.
Yeah, we're going to talk about him after, because obviously he's someone who could have been lined up for Highgate, but he's going to do Manchester 10K the day after on the road, which, yeah, I guess fair enough. He's kind of done with the track, I suppose. Not forever, but maybe for now. Yeah, Bouchard's an interesting one. You talk about kind of going with that pace. It'd be interesting to see, when the pace gets released, what they're going to go for. You presume they're going to try and just run 27:10. And I think he's stuck in a little bit of a hard place, to be honest with you, because, I mean, he'll know what shape he's in, but, he's got a PB of 27:36. He's run decent this season. Nothing screams at you that he's super fit. I guess only he knows that. But, 28:0 back in Valencia, 10K on the roads. So... But like, what does he do? Is what I'm trying to say. Does he just come up, go off a little bit of a slower pace and just try and break 27:30? Because I just feel like in a 10, if you try and go off at 27:10, it may get a bit ugly. To be honest,
is there any point almost? Does Andy Bouchard need to run 27:25 PB? Is that gonna?
Yeah. Well, this is what. Well, yeah, I don't know what his aims are. Yeah, I don't know if he wants to try and get a time for Worlds, or if he's literally just having a run out and wants to become a British champion and get a decent run out and a decent time. But, one presumes he will try and go at that pace. I mean, it's interesting to see what the lights will get set at and what the pacemakers will be running, because I think if they're smart, they'll operate a kind of 27:20 pace. And you're going to attract more people. I mean, Paul Chelimo's in there, huge name. We know what he's done. What is he, two-time Olympic medalist, world medalist as well. But he does not look fit enough right now to run 27:10.
Yeah, and that's it. Obviously, Chelimo ran a half marathon recently. He's just made that move to Kip Run. So maybe it was the shoes that let him down. But I think, he ran like 64 half.
It was pretty rough.
But he did say on there, he said he did enjoy the roads though, and he can see himself moving there in the future. So I presume he's doing a fair bit of strength work, which means should be helpful for a 10K. But like you say, when your half is that off it, that's looking potentially unlikely. But great,
yeah, 62 half, like, is that... It's hard to know what that equates to in 10K terms, because it's not everything. The half isn't everything. We've seen Bouchard run some incredible 5Ks and he hasn't got near kind of low 60. We've also seen Mark Scott run some insane 5Ks and insane 10Ks. And his half, I don't think he's ever had the right race to really attack a PB half. But again, what is he, like a 61, 62 runner over the half, so I'm not sure the half is everything. But yeah, I mean, lately, actually yesterday, in fact, he ran a 7:49 over 3001 in France, so he's probably shaping up okay. But yeah, it's 7:49, that's definitely not 27:10 shape. But he wins the race and he knows he's got Highgate a week later, so
yeah, so maybe it's a bit of prep.
What Chelimo are we getting, basically?
Yeah. All we do know is I'm sure he'll put on a show, and that is what we want to see as well, because we do want to see an exciting race, and I think we definitely will, like with the likes of the other people in there. Obviously, you mentioned Crippers, like fantastic performance last year, but also in previous years at Highgate, he's been someone who supported a lot. We've got his younger brother in there, 27-year-old guy.
Yeah, if you remember his brother clapped him down the home straight. I think Cripper lapped his younger brother last year. His brother moved out, clapped him down the home straight, or even ran with him for a little bit on that last lap, I think, with him alongside. So, but I mean, he's done a 212 marathon, like you said, Lum, just last month. So he's the top, you know, the top, the, I guess, the pointy end of that men's field is looking very good. And all guys who can definitely attack 27:30, but I think the only one who can go beyond that is probably Stanley Imbrue.
Yeah, one athlete who kind of stuck out to me is this Rentazawa from Japan. His PB is actually 27:23 from a couple years ago, but haven't ran that in Japan. So
yeah,
just haven't seen him on the circuit. But obviously with a PB like that, he's actually the same age as Stanley Mabiru as well. They're both 23 or 22 or 23. So crazy young talents, and athletes of that age can make massive chunks, even if they're already at those sorts of times.
Yeah, we know the running culture in Japan's massive, and in fact, that's actually where Mamburu ran his 27:33 already this year over in Japan. So that season kicks off early doors. But yeah, you're right, and I think there's going to be enough there. And I think last year, this is what obviously Cripper struggled with. It was just kind of him, Sam Aiken, and Mil Kares. There didn't seem to be much depth at that top end. I think they've definitely improved on that this year. They've attracted a few more international names. And I think over the next few years, I think Highgate can continue to do that. And I think it won't be long before. I mean, I remember saying this last year, it's not going to be long before those real big names come knocking. And, you know, Chelimo is one of those now. He's got the accolades. Maybe he's a little past what he was, but you can never count him out.
Yeah, so, and then when you're getting the likes of Mburu in, like, even though he's a kind of, we're calling him a young unknown, but at the same time, he got a silver medal at the World Champs last year, so I guess he already has arrived.
It's hard to believe, and honestly, I bet people would be listening to this podcast and be like, who?
That 10K was so crazy in Eugene last year.
I just remember, obviously, a massive, you know, when you remember it, you just remember a massive pack all kicking, and you remember Chepsky kind of winning, but you kind of forget those names in there that aren't as well known. Like, we know Grant Fisher and Mohamed, like, featured in that top pack as well. But yeah, the actual medals, you can sometimes forget, you know, who comes second and third.
Yeah. A couple others in there. We've got Ephraim Gide, 27:59 guy. Scullion's in there, obviously 2:09 marathoner. What's he going to do? I know he's kind of tried a few 10Ks recently, but probably not run at his best. But based himself in London a lot of the time. So it's a nice local one, and we'll see how he gets on.
He surely drew a PB.
Yeah. And I think that's pretty much everyone. Obviously, Cipinelli as well from Italy. And good to see a strong international field, despite it not being this Euro 10K Cup that we did have a few years ago. Because I think that's what's been good, is despite it moving on from that. Because I think it was only meant to do that for 1 year, but then it got put on for next year as well because of COVID. We've managed to maintain, or they've managed to maintain, sorry, a strong international presence, which is great to see.
Look, someone who is an interesting name in there is Henry McCluckey, having already raced a very good 5K abroad. Kind of surprised to see him so young tackle it, but I think fair play. Like, there's not an age on these, and we always say, you know, if you're 18, 19, but you're a good 10,000 meter runner, crack on. You know, why wait till you're 22, 23 to give it a go? I know McCluckey's not that young. He is about 21, 22, isn't he? So, yeah, fair play to him, but it's just, look, you know, he's already done 2 5Ks under his belt. He is starting the season strong. So it'd be, yeah, interesting to see what he can debut at over the 10, and probably wants to look at, you know, he's got one eye on Europeans, European age groups, and yeah, to see if he can kind of possibly, he might be thinking about sort of doubling up out there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, when we spoke to Jack Rowe on the podcast ages ago, and obviously we know what Jack Rowe's done now in terms of the domestic scene anyway, but he was somebody who went to, I think, World Youths for...
No. You're on the 23s.
On 23, sorry, for 10K. And so someone who did it at a pretty young age, and he's obviously kind of carried on, and probably someone that we'd expect to see in the 10K a bit more in the coming years, despite obviously running that super 5K PB recently.
Yeah, and I'm sure he toyed with the idea of doing Highgate again. But I think do you remember him last year? I think that kind of did set him back throughout the course of the season. And I think he, you know, from speaking to him, he really wants to nail that 5K this year. He's already run 13:20. I think, you know, he is someone who's probably looking at that and thinking the race he was actually in wasn't that ideal. He was second in it and he was having to share a lap each with the Belgian athletes. So I think he can probably go on if he gets the right race and run 13 teens and low 13s. And obviously we saw Johnny Davies' terrific result as well, 13:16. So British 5,000 meter run is in a very good place. And it's just a shame these guys are running so fast and yet they may not have anything to show for it at the end of the year. Whereas 2 years ago, they'd be off, you know, they'd be off to a world championships and they'd get their shot at the big time. So, obviously he's not doing it this year. And because I just think he wants to focus on the 5K. He's not done with that yet. So.
Yeah, definitely. I think because of that, it means probably the only chance we really have is Bouchard in terms of getting a standard. And then obviously we expect him to be in the top two in the British field. The only other thing that we might see for, say, the world is Emil Kares potentially could chase a time. And then because I doubt second place in Highgate is going to run the time, that would just, I imagine, slot him straight into the team. And the same could be said for maybe not specifically Jack Rowe, but someone like Jack Rowe, if he decided to just race one later down the line, pop a standard. Well, I think that's probably a bit out of his reach. And that's no disrespect for him, but the standard is just ridiculous. I still can't get my head around this.
Yeah.
This 10K standard.
Yeah. So I'm actually in, obviously I'm in Copenhagen at the moment, and the gentleman I've been working with, spent quite a lot of time working with World Athletics. And he did kind of say, and obviously a lot of talk's been about British athletics struggling at the moment. And, you know, interestingly, he said, I think for the kind of pinnacle of the world champs to work, he said World Athletics were potentially toying with the idea of, he doesn't work for them anymore, by the way, so this is just kind of, I guess, rumors from my part, but he did say they're toying with the idea of taking selection out of governing bodies' hands. So the world champs is, and that's what they've tried to do with the ranking system, but then governing bodies like ours have turned around and said, no, we're going to ignore it. And you know, he said, you know, for the world champs to be a world champs, we probably need to take it outside, you know, stop letting governing bodies decide who the NCAA is. Yeah, make it like the NCAAs, make it like a bit more of a qualification process. And look, if you have five or six Kenyans, you have five or six Kenyans. It's the world champs for a reason. But yeah, opening it up. And so, you know, some interesting talks around that. And I can kind of see, I guess, the idea behind it and the potential behind it as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. You don't want to come fourth in the world champs, but you'd have been 10th for the Kenyan champs.
But also, like, we talk about these meets, like getting into a Diamond League is harder. It's harder to get into a Diamond League than it is to make a world championship final, let's say. And it is, you know, when you think of a world championship final, you always get people in them who you're like, I haven't really seen him on the circuit, you know? Is that the way to go as well? Diamond Leagues are just purely exhibition races at the moment. And I know they've got the continental tours and stuff now, but again, it is just making it very hard to follow from a fan's perspective.
But then that's an interesting one because we talk, the Diamond League probably suffers because of that. It's not as much of a spectacle sometimes.
Yeah. And
but then if we're arguing that the world should kind of follow a similar suit, then.
He also told me, interesting, and it's something that I wanted to kind of work out myself, but could never be bothered to do it when I was watching the Diamond League, but 22%. So Diamond League coverage is usually what, 2 hours? 22% of that time, you're actually watching something. How about that for a stat? 22%, something is actually happening on your TV screen and you're watching it, you know, and that's it might not even be on your TV screen. As we know, the broadcast is flicking, do whatever, but 22% of the time, there is something going on in that stadium. And when you think about that and it's 2 hours long, like, Jesus, you can make the meet so much shorter. So, and I think the way it is going to go is it's like nights for 10K. You're just going to have specialist one-day events. So I think one-day events are kind of dying in athletics unless they're very, very focused. And, you know, sad as it is, field events thrive. I mean, we've seen them thrive last year in like train stations and parks and stuff like that, like pole vault competitions. They thrive. Like, that is their night of 10Ks. You know, we know the 10K thrives at Parliament Hill. Talk of that. They've got that £2 million investment. Like, just brilliant, because it's going to just continue year on year on year now. And it's just getting stronger every year still. But like, these events thrive for one-offs. But then when you put them in a main athletics program, people don't seem to care. It doesn't attract the same fans. It doesn't attract the same buzz. So I think these one-off events, in my eyes, are the way to go, because you just get, especially in niche events. And, you know, we are a distance podcast. We don't deem the 10K to be niche, but, you know, the sad reality is I think the 5 and the 10K, they are a little bit niche, and the distance events in general. So, you know, I think they're the way to go in my eyes. And they obviously make money as well. So,
yeah. And maybe if it gets to it, it might even be the point where, like, one day there's a 10K track major instead of the Worlds, almost. Like, we've seen it in the marathon. Like, we've argued on this podcast before, the Olympics and the Worlds are not the the marathon. So
100%. And there's no surprise that road races thrive so much. And it's because they're one-offs. It's a flat marathon. It's a flat half. It's a flat 10K. There's nothing else going on for the viewer to get confused about, you know. And also, they thrive because of the mass participation as well behind it. Let's not kid ourselves there. But yeah, anyway, so we've digressed a little bit. We're previewing kind of next weekend. Just quickly, we've got Manchester 10K. That's going to be on the BBC as well on Sunday the 21st. Unfortunately, you haven't got me commentating. It's probably going to be, the big dogs. But yeah, Farah and Mark Scott, little head-to-head. I mean, I'm actually... I was going to say Mark Scott's a heavy favourite in my eyes right now. To be honest with you. But, you know, especially because Farah's coming off the marathon as well. Had he not raced that marathon, maybe you're kind of putting them as equal. But to be fair, Mark's half, it's probably quite similar that he did in Istanbul. It's probably quite similar to Farah's marathon. Like, you're not telling me Farah couldn't run a 62 high, 63.
Yeah, true. Yeah, obviously, we know Mark Scott coming off injury and trying to settle into a new training routine and that sort of thing.
63:15, sorry, his half marathon. So, yeah, you know, they're probably about the same. So it's going to be an interesting duel.
Yeah, maybe it'll be the passing of the baton. Obviously, we know this is Farah's last season. So I guess fair enough to him for trying to get out there and get the last of his race experiences. So,
and then... moving forward to next month, we got a shout out Podium 5K, because this is something which crept up on us. Scott announced this week on the 17th of June up in Barraford. We know it's fast, and I wonder how many more names are going to be added to this field. Mark Scott and Jack Crowe are doing a 5K. It's going to be a fast 5K up there. If it's a good evening, we know they can roll on that track. I think Barnes is talking about making the course even faster by moving the start. And you mentioned Lum. Do they have a shot at the world standards? 13:07. I think 14:57. The women, they definitely have a shot if any women are doing that. But yeah, 13:07. Do they have a shot? What did Mark Scott run 3 years ago? 13:19, 13:20.
Yeah. And my thinking for this was purely when I saw Jack Rose doing it. And I know Chris obviously puts on some great prize money and it's a great event. But I thought after that 13:20, why? The only reason you do it is probably think, yeah, this field's going to be really good. And the fact that the times are now, you can run your times on the road. If you're going to put a hard 5K effort in, why not go for it? Especially if you've got the likes of Mark Scott to race against. It's as good a chance as any, potentially, if the field is assembled and the weather is good, et cetera, et cetera. But
I think we're going to get a lot more names added to that. And coming off the back of that Emil breaking 10 event as well, you know,
I wouldn't be surprised if the likes of Bouchard is in that, those sorts of names.
And the lead car was, you know, absolutely vital when Emil's breaking 10. They get one at that 5K and it's a no-brainer again, and I'm sure they will.
Yeah, and you might be commentating for that, so then people can tune in as well.
We hope so. We hope so. And just quickly then, a couple results coming out this weekend that we've just briefed. Couldn't actually find the official results, but did have the chance during travel and whatnot just to watch a few bits from that Irish Miles meeting. Ethan Hussey, 146-1. What a way to start your season. Coming off that World Champs silver last year, he's an underdog. I think this is the problem, not the problem, but this is the exciting thing with the 800 is always seems to be someone's year. You know, someone's always having that sweet year, and it could well be Hussey opening up in 146-1. Wow. Yeah. And winning comfortably.
That's the thing. Is Hussey going to be the 800s Matt Stonier this year? You know what I mean? Like,
the Ben Pattersons, you know?
Yeah.
So, and obviously, like Max Bergen and stuff, he's been in at South Africa alongside, you know, Ben Patterson. And when are these boys opening up? We look forward to it. So I'm sure BMC Sports City's in a few weeks. I'm sure we might see a few people open up there. But yeah, some very good results. I think Izzy Ives and Isabel Boffy. I only watched on the stream. Ives may have dipped below two, which is an absolutely huge run, or she's definitely run two flat. And the same with Boffy as well. Kieran McGinn in there for fourth. So both of those, you know, Birmingham girls, if you like, looking very, very strong as well. We had Westy in the 3K. Battling out with Batsil, Nick Griggs, Smart Pierce was in there as well. Those guys all running around 7:55 to 8 minutes. So solid season openers, and the race didn't look ideal either. Like, they did get a bit detached. It was a little bit strung out, basically. So a tough race for them. And then just finally, obviously we did have a continental tour today in Kenya. So let me read you some freaky results out there.
Yeah, chat me through the altitude results.
This is the baffling thing. I swear, Kenyans race the same at altitude than they do at sea level. Like, this doesn't seem to phase them. For example, the 800 was won in 143.3. Wanyonyi. Kenyamau was second, 143.6. Chariot, 144.9. Like, Kenyamau was your man. Wasn't he your man for the World Champs 800?
Was my man for the World Champs, so...
Yeah. Men's 5K, which it does affect a little bit. But I would say it's not the strongest field out there. Was one in like 13:26. Whole load of Kenyans and Ethiopians, as you'd expect in that one. Steeple, Amos Kuriri, we know he's pretty established. Leonard Bett in there as well. Chimutai, Abraham Kibiwot. These boys are kind of Diamond League regulars, if you like. 8:18 for the win for Kuriri. And women's 1500, 401 at altitude. Oof.
Yeah. So impressive stuff. And I just don't know how these athletes keep coming back and back and back and racing week in, week out. Because that's what they'll do now until Worlds. They're just going to be at all of these meets.
One name that we have got to mention is Mary Moore, 158.8 at altitude, season's best.
Ooh. Yeah. And we spoke about, obviously, Key Levy, a thing Mo. Always forget about Mora. We talked about last year going into some of the champs, and then obviously we saw what happened there. So it's going to be super exciting.
That's a good result, like 158.8 altitude in Kenya. Jesus. And I did see they actually let fans in for free at the National Stadium. Kenyan governing body decided just to let fans in for free. So it was... the picture I saw was a bit misleading, because when you actually watch the feed, it wasn't actually full, but there are a lot of people packed in certain sections of the stands, and it does make you wonder, like, is that a way to go as well? You know, at these meetings. Well,
imagine we did that. Imagine we let people.
I've always said, if you can't sell a stadium, just let kids in for free or something, just to get seats on bums. Once they get a taste for it and experience it, bums on seats on bums. Yeah, just to get seats on bums. Yeah, just to let them experience it, get a taste for it, and then they can decide if they like it. And then in a few years' time, you might just be comfortably filling stadiums and people buying tickets. So,
yeah, we know the answers, but no one listens. So,
I don't know if we do know the answers.
Yeah, that's my top tip for this.
Our suggestions change by the day how to fix this sport. And I think that is one of the problems, though. Like, everyone does have an idea and an opinion. And it's just like, yeah, who's responsible for kind of honing that and implementing it?
That's the thing, though. It's not up to us, is it, though, Matt? So we've got an excuse. Top tip, If you watch a Diamond League, 22% of it is athletics. The rest
that's your takeaway.
And if you listen to Sunday podcast, 100% of it is myself and Matt chatting shit. So make of that what you will.
Actually, we've got a stellar week lined up, guys. We got three or four guests
booked in. So yeah, we got some exciting guests for you. I'm sure you guys will enjoy.
Big names. We've had to be patient. So do apologize. You've had to listen to us for 2 weeks in a row. But these elites, they are. We have to work with them. You see. So we've got a big.
Yeah, and also, we wanted to make sure we get the right ones on too. So
yes.
So thanks very much for listening. We'll catch you very soon.